Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to Metron Live, coming to you from beautiful historic Kirkwood, which is Midtown adjacent in historic Atlanta. And we welcome you to the Metron podcast. As always, we thank Charles McFall, the rock god of podcasting, for faithfully making this happen week after week. Metron people, would you please welcome the podcast people? See how Reggie timed that? He timed it. I saw you take that applause. See, that's how you do it. He was out there going, wait for it. Cue the applause. All right, thank you. Hey, you got to get it while you can. That's all I can say. All right. Thank you for the great outpouring from the last week's first installment of the series that we're doing in June, which we're going to be doing for the rest of the month. The title of which is Mount Zion Realities, Living a Free Life of Righteousness, Peace, and Joy in a Legalistic World. The text, the main point that we're going to use is out of Hebrews chapter 12. And last week I showed that passage to you out of the NIV, the New you know when I say NIV, you know I'm saying New International Version. Sometimes I remember one time when we used to be on Klondike Road in the grocery store, I kept talking about the Amplified Bible, and this guy kept asking me, so where do you find an Amplified Bible? I said, well, you can get them any Christian bookstore. He said, but where do you, like, how do you plug the amplifiers in? And he was not being funny. I said, no, it means the language is amplified. And he said, oh, every time you say the Amplified Bible, I keep thinking, how do I hook that up? So, as you know, one reason I quit telling people to bring Bibles to church with them years ago is in one message, I will refer to, 30 different translations. So you'd have to, now you have them on your phone, but back in the day, you would have had to come in with a stack of books. Anyway, I want to show it to you this week out of The Voice. That's also a translation. That's not just a singing show on NBC. And it's Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18 through 24. He says, you have not come to the place that can be touched as Israel did in Mount Sinai, to a mountain crowned with blazing fire, darkness, gloom, and a windstorm, or to the blast of a trumpet and the sound of a voice and message so harsh that the people begged not to hear another word. As I showed you last week, that's out of Exodus 19 and 20. It's where God gives the Ten Commandments to Moses. And then the rest of chapter 20, he keeps speaking to the people to the point that they say, Moses, please tell God we cannot take, it's too much to hear his voice like this. Please, you can speak to us. And they should have just stayed with God, because God stopped at 10. Moses went to 613. You should have. It's like getting, have you ever done this when you're at the checkout line at the grocery store and there's one that's a lot shorter and you think, I'm going to get in that one, and then you get in that one and you think, I should have stayed where I was. Y'all should have stayed with God until Jesus came and gave us two, which definitely streamlined it. But anyway, he says, they could not bear the command that was given that if even a beast touches the mountain, it must be stoned. The sight was so terrible that even Moses said, I am trembling with fear. No, instead, you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, to the heavenly Jerusalem, to heavenly messengers unnumbered, to a joyful feast, to the assembly of the firstborn registered as heaven's citizens, to God, the righteous judge of all, and to the spirits of all the righteous who have been perfected. You have come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant between God and humanity, and to his sprinkled blood, which speaks a greater word than the blood of Abel, crying out from the earth. I love all of the book of Hebrews, but I love this passage. We're not exactly sure who wrote Hebrews, But I'm going to say the Holy Ghost wrote it. Hang on. And what I love about this passage is he says, he speaks of it past tense. He doesn't say, you're trying to make it to Mount Zion. He says, you have not come to Mount Sinai. Although, when I read a lot of even friends of mine and family members of mine, some of the stuff they post, I think, y'all didn't get the memo that we've moved off Sinai to Zion, have you? Because I can tell their paradigm of all things scriptural are totally coming through the Old Testament. It's like they never heard of Jesus. They never heard of the New Covenant. Anyway, he says, you have not come to Mount Sinai. You've come to Mount Zion. And he says, it's one thing I love about this here, it says, to a joyful feast. I don't know how you were raised, and I'm not, you know, I try to say as many positive things about my background as some things that could be perceived negative. But I remember some of the older people, even my grandparents, there was nearly an implied frowning on laughter. Like I can remember we'd be at my grandparents' house, and like if the cousins were laughing and cutting up, and I'm sure we were obnoxious. But as soon as we started laughing, you know, that I remember my granddaddy saying, children, tone that down. And they would say, that laugh's going to turn into a cry. Bible speaks out against foolish jesting. So there was always this austere thing that you weren't supposed to have too much fun, which was a problem for me because, it's possible had I not gone in the ministry, I might have tried a hand at stand-up comedy. I do see the funny side to things, and I love comedy. And I remember when I started being in my teens, when I started being introduced to the charismatic renewal and the faith message, for some of its downside, at least these people were a lot more upbeat and joyful, and they would laugh, and they didn't take everything so seriously. And that I found that very compelling. One reason I don't have to explain this to y'all, but one reason I use so much humor when I teach is, in one sermon, I'll probably kill 4 or 5 sacred cows. And people have had long-held allegiances to certain mindsets, and you can't just take that away from them. You've got to make people laugh. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. And, if I were saying some of the same things without some comedy, it's for some, not for y'all, because y'all are class A, y'all are platinum, y'all are in the first class section. But for people that aren't new to freedom, it takes them a minute to figure out if it's okay to be free. You know, Psalm 126, he says, when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were them that dreamed. It seemed so unreal, it seemed too good to be true. I think that's why I wanted to sing God is So Good today. Whatever your vision of God, however, you know, my idea of God has evolved a lot over the years, but the goodness of that entity has only gotten stronger and better. So anyway, that's what we're focusing on. You have not come to Mount Sinai. You've come to Mount Zion. If you didn't hear the message last week, go to YouTube/BishInTheNow, and it's on there. Now, you remember in Men in Black when those guys had that little silver thing where they could just make people totally forget, like whatever just happened, like you have no recollection of it. I'm about to talk to you about the woman at the well, and you've never heard this story before. Boom. Like you have no idea. I'm not even sure you've heard about Jesus. You've definitely not heard about her. Because I'm going to say some things about this story as it relates to Zion versus Sinai that I have not said before. The amazing thing about this story, it's one of the most multifaceted diamonds, certainly in the Gospels. You can use this story to teach about diversity, about racism, about women's issues, about transparency. I've used it to teach a lot of things. And I'm going to show you a little bit of it, but it's just too wordy if I have to put the whole thing on there. And I don't want you to get lost in the, I don't know if y'all are the way I am. If I see too many words, I have a tendency to glaze over. Like if I go through a drive-through, the menus really kind of freak me out a little bit. It's too many words. So when they say, you know, sir, what would you have? I just say, number one with a Diet Coke. And that usually will get me something, unless they say, sir, you're at the bank, you're at the drive-through. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, can I still get number one with a Diet Coke? Anyway, so I'm just going to tell you a little bit. John chapter 4, it says that Jesus and his entourage, his disciples, were traveling. And they had to go through a place called Samaria, which was right there adjacent to where they lived. But it was like, it's like the way East Berlin and West Berlin used to be. Like people could be across the street from one another, but they're living in another world. And the Jews were super prejudiced against the Samaritans. That's why the term Good Samaritan's not used in the Bible, but the reason you always hear that story, the saying the Good Samaritan, is because like that's the only good one people could think of. You know what I mean? The Bible writers are like, he's not like the rest of them. I was at Starbucks this week over in Ponce, and I went outside. I was sitting there drinking my coffee, and I was online, and these two guys, there's no way I can describe to these guys without sounding like I'm stereotyping, but let me just say, they were a couple of characters. And I had already, they were talking so loud, I could not hear their conversation. So they'd already said a couple of things, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they just said that. And then I looked at the guy's t-shirt, what he had, which I will not tell you. It was like, oh my God, I can't believe you were, I mean, they were a hoot. And, but anyway, I'm on my phone, and one of them finally turns around and he said, sir, can I ask you something? I said, yeah, what? He said, how old are you? I said, why are you asking? He said, because we're talking about how people look. He said, I was born in 1963. I said, well, I'm older than you. And he said, well, I don't think I look my age. I said, don't make me say blacks don't crack. I know that's what you're trying to pull out of me. And so they kept saying something. So I'm joking with him. I said, are y'all trying to start something with me? Because don't think I won't come over there. And they both, for a minute, they looked like, oh, snap. And then they realized I was joking. Well, then it starts this whole conversation about aging and, you know. And so this one guy, he said, can I just say something? I said, okay. He said, I'm not prejudiced. But he said, for a Caucasian, you're good looking. I said, just for a Caucasian? He said, well, yeah, I mean, like, for a Caucasian, you don't look your age. I said, well, on behalf of the people from Caucasia, I thank you, I guess. But he said, well, I just, you know, I said, well, so what are you saying? Most Caucasians are ugly. He said, don't put words in my mouth. I'm just saying. So when I think of the Good Samaritan, I'm the handsome Caucasian. So anyway, so in this story, the disciples go into the village there to get something for Jesus to eat. So they tell him, just wait right here. And he stops and waits at this place called Jacob's Well. Now, the way these cities would have been set up back then, the well would have been like the town square. That was everybody's water source. That's where the women would go in the morning to fill their water pots. That would be the water they were going to use for the day. So it became, that was the gossip fence. That was the mall. That was where you exchange recipes. That was the hub of activity. That was Facebook. That's where everybody came. So Jesus just sits down right in the middle of them, which is already a little bit provocative because typically men weren't at Jacob's Well. That was usually a place where the women went to, you know, because you had to have water for the day. So Jesus sees this woman bringing up a bucket or some container to draw a well with, draw water with, and he says, ma'am, would you give me a drink? Well, already, you know, if you don't know the context of this, you think, well, what's the big deal? Well, this would be like this would be like Alabama in the, I know I'm stereotyping, but Alabama in the 50s, some little white community and some black guy sitting there that nobody knows who he is, and he's just suddenly there, and he asks, I mean, black men were killed for less than that. And, you know, you just, back then, you were just taught, if you were African American, like, don't, you know, don't speak to white people, or, you know, just avoid them. So Jesus just busts right through their version of that. And he doesn't care that he's a strange man talking to a woman, which was not done. He's a Jew talking to a Samaritan, which was not done. Jesus did not get the memo that he was supposed to behave himself. And so he says, would you give me something to drink? And it starts this conversation with them. And this is where he tells the woman, the woman says, I see that you don't have anything to, any container for me to put it in. And then he flips on her and he says, if you only knew who you were talking to, I would tell you that I can give you rivers. I can give you living water. Water. If you drink this water, you'll never thirst again. So you've heard that. If you've been around the Bible at all, you've heard the story of rivers of living water. It sort of sets up this conversation where she's not, and when you know a little more about her, you understand why he chose the right woman to talk to. Because this woman knew how to talk to men, okay? There's some women that if a strange man had said something, they would be like, oh my God. You know, and this woman, she's immediately engaged. She's not afraid. And so in the discourse, and I'm going to show you this, but he says, before you give me something to drink, go call your husband. If you ever follow the conversations of the Gospels, it's like a chase scene trying to stay on topic with Jesus, because he would bring you here, and then he'd say something, you'd say something, and then he'd answer in some asymmetrical way that you're thinking, that what are you talking, that's nothing to do with what we're talking about. And so when he says go call your husband, she just very naturally says, I don't have one. And then he takes it very next level. He says, you have well said you don't have one, because you've had five and you're living with a man now that you're not married to. You're shacking up with number six. And, excuse me again. Somebody needs to tell me, take my time. Take your time. For those of you listening to the podcast, I'm drinking water. Is that really obnoxious? Listen. Boom. All right. So, he says to her, well, let me show you what he says. And I think, what translation am I using for this one? The Message. This is John chapter 4, verses 15 through 24. Okay. The woman said, sir, give me this water so I won't ever get thirsty, won't ever have to come back to this well again. He said, go call your husband and then come back. I have no husband, she said. That's nicely put. I have no husband. You've had five husbands, and the man you're living with now isn't even your husband. You spoke the truth there, sure enough. Oh, so you're a prophet. Well, tell me this. Our ancestors worshiped God at this what? Mountain. All right. All through the scriptures, and if you ever get a chance to go to Israel, when I say mountains, we're not talking about the Rocky Mountains. They're more like what people would... from this part of the country, probably say those are big hills, but it's definitely very hilly terrain, and it seems like all through the, especially in the Gospels, but really all through the Scripture, any significant thing that happened with God happened on a mountain. So you got Mount Sinai and the Mount of Transfiguration and the Mount of Ascension and the Mount of Temptation and the Sermon on the Mount. So anytime somebody ascended a mountain, it was symbolic of change, transcendence, coming up to a higher elevation. So they begin to talk about mountains. Now, they're not specifically talking about Sinai versus Zion here, but if you understand the If you understand the spirit of this, that's exactly what they're talking about, okay? So we say mountain, we're talking, mountain's really a mindset in these contexts. So she says, our ancestors worship God at this mountain, but you Jews insist that the Jerusalem is the only place for worship, right? Believe me, woman, the time is coming when you Samaritans will worship the Father, neither here at this mountain or there in Jerusalem. You worship guessing in the dark. We Jews worship in the clear light of day. God's way of salvation is made available through the Jews, but the time is coming. It has, in fact, come when what you're called will not matter and where you go to worship will not matter. It's who you are and the way you live that count before God. Your worship must engage your spirit in the pursuit of truth. This is where in the King James he says, God is a spirit and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. You have to understand the context that this is said in, because he's saying this in response to her telling the truth about her life, okay? That's the kind of people the Father is out looking for, those who are simply and honestly themselves before him in their worship. God is sheer being itself, spirit. Those who worship him must do it out of their very being. And you could just as easily put the word authenticity there, and it would still be valid. Out of their very being, their spirits, their true selves. I saw a meme this morning. I actually wish I'd saved it. It was somebody put it on the feed, and it says, remember, the universe is responding to who you really are, not who you're pretending to be. And I thought, word, yeah, exactly. Their spirits, their true selves in adoration. All right? Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of how many of you have had multiple relationships in your life, multiple marriages. I myself am on my third marriage. I'm believing this is my last one, but I know what it's like to go through a divorce, and I know what it's like to have a blended family, and that's something that many of you have experienced. I'm making no judgment on the number of husbands that somebody might have, but this woman has had five. Now let me just keep it real with you. If you're a man, you're out dating. You meet some woman, I don't think he'll mind me saying this. Ernie spoke at Leona's service, and to me it was the best part of Leona's service. First of all, I was surprised. Ernie doesn't talk much. I was surprised he got up and said it, but he was talking about. Do you mind me saying this? He said that he had been through a divorce. Is what he said, and they were in a nightclub or someplace like that. And you had a friend. Did he know Leona? But he had just met her, and he said, you ought to go talk to that woman. I think you would like her. And she was engaged in conversation with somebody. And I'm not putting words in your mouth, but he said, when I went over, he said, I wasn't used to going over to speak to women. Usually women spoke to me. I was like, no, he did not. Apparently, I speak the truth in God. I lie not. No, I think we heard it. Some of us were there. There was no shyness. Don't try to change it now when I'm talking about, when I'm up here on Mount Zion talking about spirit and in truth. We all heard you. I got witnesses in here. What we heard is, no, women come to me. Isn't that what you heard? All right. I've asked one of the elders. The elders they've confirmed. Let the word be confirmed in the mouth of two or three witnesses. All right. but he said something, and it just, there's something about when you hear an authentic word, real, recognizes real. And he said, when she opened her mouth to speak, I fell for her. And it was such a real, that's when I started crying at the thing. And then I was a mess all through my thing. It's all your fault. You got me unplugged. But those of us that knew and know, because I don't want to speak of her in past tense, know Leona, could see that. I mean, how could you not love her? And that just sounded really real. Now, if you meet somebody, because Leona had had previous relationships, but if you meet somebody, you're on a date, you're, you know, at a certain age, you know, when you get up around in your 30s, 40s, 50s, you meet somebody now that's never been married, I mean, you might want to check that out, because there might be some reason, you know, why. When they're in their 20s, I'm going to go real here. So if y'all are, if y'all, any of you Sinaiites aren't going to like this. This is Mount Zion preaching. If somebody says, I've been married before, I mean, you might say, yeah, I've been married. Yeah, I have too. And then if you keep talking and you say, well, how many times have you been married? If somebody says, I've been married a couple of times, you'd be like, yeah, well, okay. I mean, you know, sometimes things don't work out. Somebody says, well, I've been married 5 times. Unless you've been married 5 times or more, the thought's going to cross your mind, what the heck? Run. I mean, you think about people like Zsa Zsa Gabor was married 8 times. Elizabeth Taylor was married 8 times. I mean, after 7 or 8, I always wonder, what are those guys thinking? You know, I mean, this is like a revolving door thing. And again, if you're like, Bishop, I've been married 5 times. I don't know. You don't need to tell me that. I'm not throwing you under the bus. I'm saying, if somebody said they'd been through that many, you might have the thought, well, we might go slow on this. And so the, you know, in this day and time, you know, is a half of marriages end in divorce. I mean, it's like if you have kids who are from what they used to call a broken home, I don't even know that we would call it that now, because that's not even applicable. I know with my kids, like all of their friends' parents had been divorced for whatever reason. It wasn't going back and forth on weekends and stuff. That wasn't unusual for them. It might have been back in the 50s or something, but for better or for worse, by the time I had kids, it just wasn't that rare. And, excuse me.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Huh? So, anytime you go through something, any kind of failure, but especially a failed relationship, even if it's not your fault, even if you were married to an abuser, even if you were married to somebody who stole from you, if you married somebody who cheated on you, whatever, if you needed out, there's still something about actually going through the actual breaking of it, that if you say it doesn't affect you, you're not telling the truth. It does. It's not the end of the world, but it does. Otherwise, let me say this. You don't see people in the club walk around saying, hey, I've been married 5 times. Can I give you my number? I mean, that's not something, it might not be something you lie about. It's also something that you probably, you know, you do, because even if it's not your fault, if you, whatever, it still feels like a failure. Yeah. Is this going to be too real? So I've been thinking about this, and I talked about it in one of the 11:11s. I'd written a meditation about why people don't receive, a lot of times they don't receive good things because they have a sense of unworthiness. And so I was really meditating on where does that sense of unworthiness come from? And I was listening to, I may be saying this wrong, but I was listening to, later that day, I was listening to a podcast about nutrition. And they were talking about antioxidants. And it caught my attention, because I'm always talking about antioxidants and I have no idea what the heck I'm talking about. Like, last week I had blueberries. I was getting a bowl of them. I said, hey, Ken, you want some of these blueberries? Which, by the way, Ken and I are still... He's talking about 5 marriages. No. Last week he was on call This week he's on family vacation with his extended family. They go every year from Saturday to Saturday. That's written in the Bible. They can't deviate from that at all. And so I've got to wait because I'm having surgery in a few weeks and I have to go in for a CAT scan Tuesday morning. So I have to wait for that. But Ken and I are still very much betrothed. Just so if you're wondering, like, where's he going with this? He's talking about divorce. I ain't seen Ken in a couple of weeks. I bind you in Jesus' name. So, I said, you should eat some of these blueberries. They have antioxidants. And I sound like I know what I'm talking about. I know it's something you're supposed to have, but, and I know that, you know, there's things that make fruit dark, like, anything that makes a fruit or a vegetable, whatever makes it dark in color has antioxidants. So I know that's a good thing. Sometimes I'll buy things in the store because I think, oh, they got antioxidants. And if you said to me, sir, can you please define antioxidants? I'm like, I don't know. Just sounded good. So it caught my attention. And so he was talking about, and Doc, you correct me if I'm wrong in this, he was talking about these things called free radicals that are in your body. And for lack of better term, they're kind of free radicals in theory are, it's like the kind of stuff that rusts metal. And so there are certain things in foods that have free radicals in them that over a period of time literally kind of rust your brain. They rust your arteries. And so what antioxidants do is they fight off the effect of free radicals. That's why many times an antioxidant is also called an anti-carcinogen. I sound like I know what I'm talking about. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But y'all don't know either, so don't judge me. But I was thinking about how if you eat something that's good for you, it's not like you eat it one time and boom. It's like, oh, it worked. It's a lifetime. If you have a diet that's clogging up your arteries, it doesn't happen. You don't just eat biscuits and gravy one day and you got to go to the cardiologist. It's a lifestyle choice. It's over a period of years, you've eaten a type of way that finally, at a certain age, catches up with you, okay? And the good news is, when you do change your diet, you can reverse a lot of negative processes, and a little bit goes a long way. But when I was hearing them explain the physical, physiological truth of that, I thought that's the way unworthiness works. It's not this one thing that happens to you that makes you feel less than. It's lots of things over a period of years that just kind of accumulate, and they're just minor enough that you don't really think about them that much. They don't keep you from going through your routine, but little by little, just stuff has the same way that stuff would seep into your arteries or get into your brain, you know, that eventually could be hazardous to your health or even life challenging. Emotionally, that's what happens to us with feelings of unworthiness or shame, which is really what I want to talk about today. And you're not sure when it happened, but it might be lots of little, it could start. We all went through stuff on the playground. We all got called names. But there's things that started early in life, things that authority figures said to you, a parent who lost his or her cool that said something to you that made you feel less than. I'm not trying to get us all up in our feels today. I'm just saying there's a lifetime of little things that if you don't process them and eliminate them, they can build up over a period of time and you just feel generally unworthy, okay? And this is not just in the area of failed relationships and failed marriages. I'm just using that for an example because that's what is the deal with this woman in the story. I will say this, though. A whole lot of shame is connected to love and sex. It just is. I would nearly say the majority of shame that people deal with has to do with their sex life and how it's been interpreted through religion and through social mores and people judging you. And not even, and I'm not just trying to use the word sex, but even like maybe you fell in love with somebody that a parent didn't approve of, and they shamed you for that. You're making the wrong choice. And there's any number of things that it's just part of life. Things that people say, sometimes they don't even remember they've said them. But what it's caused, if you're not aware of it, you just pick up little bits of shame that at a certain point makes you want to hide. Now, what happened in the garden? The Creator comes in Genesis chapter 3. Adam, where are you? Adam says, well, I hid from you because I was naked and afraid. And the Creator says to him, well, who told you you were afraid? And the word afraid and ashamed are used interchangeably. The Creator is saying, I didn't say you were naked. I didn't tell you need to hide from me. Yes, I did say don't eat from this tree, but I didn't give you some ultimatum. I'm here to walk with you in the cool of the day, just like always. So clearly, our fellowship is not broken. The fact that you're hiding, this is coming from you. This isn't coming from me. You know, sometimes somebody can think you're mad at them, and you're like, now, where did you get that from? It happens all the time. Because I can just tell. I just pick up a vibe from you. Sometimes I think you're imagining it. Because there's no vibe. Let me tell you about vibes. I have not liked some people before and tried to send out a vibe. They were completely clueless. That's why I haven't heard it this in years, but back in the day, people would say, I knew today when you were preaching, you were talking about me, you looked right at me. And back when I'd have several thousand people on a Sunday, I'd think, I don't even see, I'm looking at a sea of faces. And if the lights are a certain way, I'm not really seeing all whose faces are here. I mean, you really think the sermon was about you? And let me tell you what I've learned by experience. The people, I'm not saying I haven't been above it in my life, trying to get a point across to somebody, but the people that should have gotten the point never got it anyway. So I've wasted everybody else's time. I preach this sermon, I think, man, I hope I didn't go too far, because they're going to really be, and I see them after church, and they go, oh my God, that was so good. And I think, you have no idea that was about you. You completely missed the point. I was rebuking you. I'm talking about you. People are so unaware. I've heard so many comedians talk about how they based a character on somebody that they knew, and the person they knew never, like a classic example, Porky Pig, remember how he would stutter? Well, the cartoonist at Warner Brothers, Leon Schlesinger, that they worked for, had a terrible stutter, and he was overweight, and they all hated him. And so when he was not in the room, they created this character called Porky Pig that was completely based on him. And when he saw it, they were like, oh, snap, we are going to be fired. He did not connect the dots at all. He says, that's brilliant. And Porky Pig became one of the major characters. I've listened to several podcasts of people who are on Saturday Night Live, and somebody will say, who did you base that character on? And they nearly always will say, it was kind of, well, even Tyler Perry says Madea is based on his mother and an aunt. It's like there's people that you observe in your life. And some people know it and they see it as a badge of honor. Some people are so unaware, they have no idea. I saw someone recently post something. They said, I usually never post anything political, but I'm going to say something. I thought, have you ever read your feed? Everything you write is political. Would you like me to start sending you stuff that you post all the time? That's why I quit following you, because all you do is post political stuff that I disagree with. If you post political stuff I agree with, I'm like, I'm not going to like on it, but you better tell them. So I'm not, I might send you a meme and say, I'll never post this, but you might want to. So anyway, we, over a period of time, develop the understanding that we got to be quiet about certain things. And indeed, Proverbs says a fool speaks his whole mind. You don't have to tell all your business. We certainly live in a TMI world. You know, I've watched so many backstories on things. There's some things I think, I wish I, I wish I didn't have that information about them, because now it's hard for me to enjoy their performance now because of what I know about them. Even yesterday, I was home most of the day, and I thought, I wish there was something good on Netflix. And there was a new series, it's a 4-part series, about Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I've always been interested in his story, because it's an incredible story for him to come from this rural area in Austria. And first of all, he became Mr. Universe like 2 or 3 times. He won all these body, like all around the world, he was considered the greatest bodybuilder, which for many people that would be enough. Then he goes on to become the highest paid actor in Hollywood. I mean, up until, there was one movie that finally didn't do so well, but he was on a roll there that every movie he made was making $100 million. I mean, it was just like, just unbelievable. And then he marries a Kennedy. You know, Maria Shriver was, her mother was John Kennedy's sister. So you're thinking, that's amazing. Then he becomes governor of California, married to a Kennedy, and he runs as a Republican, and he won and got reelected, and actually did some, you know, there's some dispute about this, but there's a lot of things he introduced that were way ahead of its time and real unusual for a Republican to do, especially things about green energy and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's an incredible story. It's like he's had 4 major, like, what would be for one person the big success of their life? He said like 4 of them. And then, some years ago, he and his wife were having trouble, and they had a housekeeper who, had a baby, and she, Maria, his wife, who he talks very fondly of, and I mean, she's treated very well in this, documentary. And she had some suspicion that he had had an affair with this housekeeper. And so marriage counseling thing, the counselor says, Maria has something she wants to ask you. Is Joseph your baby? Which is the little boy that the housekeeper had. And he said, he talks about it. He says, I was busted. There's nothing I could say. And when you see this kid's 20 years old now, let me tell you something. For some people with DNA, you don't need a paternity test, because that kid looks like his mother spit him out of her mouth. And but what was interesting, I watched the whole thing, all 4 episodes, and I was wondering if he was going to get to that part. And I was very impressed. It's a spoiler alert, but I'm going to ruin it for you. I was very impressed with how candid he was about it, and not... He didn't throw his wife under the bus. He didn't try to justify it. He just said, this is what happened. I effed up in a major way. And he didn't say it ruined my life. He said, it should have never happened. He said, but I don't want Joseph to feel like he shouldn't be in the world, because I love him. And it showed them working out together, and it showed a happy ending. He said, you know, Maria and I raised, they had 4 children together, and it showed them at pictures of them at different kids' graduations. And, you know, they were all together. He said, but I'd be lying if I said it was like it was before, because it's not. And it never will be again. And it was really, I'll tell you why I'm going here in just a minute. But with the next point. But it was very interesting how he didn't try to explain it. One thing that bothered me personally, I've for years been a huge Will Smith fan. And I loved Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I've watched, you know, I love watching the outtakes. And I read his autobiography. I thought it was really, really good. Because, you know, in the last few years, he's kind of been more like a, kind of a new age guru, and I've quoted quotes of his. And then, you know, the thing that happened at the Academy Awards last year. And the problem I've had with it more than that night is in every interview since then, he keeps trying to explain, this is why I did it. Love will make you do crazy things. And I'm like, no, you just need to say, if you think he's dissing your wife, then meet him out in an alleyway and y'all deal with it man to man, but not on the stage of the Academy Awards. All these people, that they need to get their awards. They've made movies. They've done all this stuff, and that you've made the whole night about you, and you're never going to live this down, that for the rest of your life, anytime somebody talks about you, they're going to talk about this. And I watch, if you're easily offended, don't watch Chris Rock's stand up about it, but it's very funny and very harsh. I mean, it's harsh. And I was thinking, with every interview with Will, I keep saying, stop saying love will make you do crazy things. Because you know what will also make you do crazy things? Crazy. And what I liked about Schwarzenegger is he just said, this is what I did. It was terrible. We all made a terrible price. He didn't say it ruined my life. He wasn't Jimmy Swaggart on there crying. I mean, he's still Arnold. And it showed his life. I mean, he's clearly a very wealthy man. And he's got a bunch of animals. And it showed him with friends around a table. I mean, it's not probably the happy ending to his life that he would have visualized. But it actually left me feeling, not that he owed me any explanation, but it made me feel satisfied. I thought, well, he told it. He told what happened. He didn't try to explain it. Because sometimes people trying to explain to you why they did what they did makes it even worse. And he just said, no, that's, you know, I did. I had an affair with her. She had the baby. I hoped it wasn't mine, but it was. And it's like, this is the story. And, you know, it was just, it was very, it was a very mature way to talk about an obvious failure. Will he be remembered that for the rest of his life? Yeah, but he'll be also be remembered. He's an icon. So nothing's going to change that. There will just always be that asterisk that, you know, it just will. There's some things, I mean, if there was, I guarantee you, if I was on Wikipedia, if I died, somebody will say he's a bishop that came out in 2010. I mean, I would like to be known for more than that, but that's probably, that will be my tagline. And it's just, that's just part of your reality. You have to own it and say, yeah, that's, I am that guy, I was that guy, whatever. What's that got to do with the woman at the well? After Jesus says this to her, she has a very unusual reaction. Let me show you the next thing. This is John chapter 4, verse 28 and 30, and this is in the New King James Version. The woman then left her water pot, went her way into the city, and said to the men, "Come see a man who told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ?" Then they went out of the city and came to him. And Michelle, go ahead and show me number 4 too. This is verse 29 in the Jonathan Mitchell New Testament. She says, "Come here, see a man who said to me or told me everything which I did or all the things which I do." All right. Now, remember, I've purged you of your memory of the woman at the well. This is amazing because she does not go, because she had this amazing conversation with him, but she does not go back to her neighborhood and say, "Come meet a man who told me about God." She doesn't say, "Come meet a man who told me about living water." She does not say, "Come meet a man who told me about worship." She doesn't mention the theological aspect. She doesn't say, "Come meet a man who," she didn't even describe him. Like, everybody does this, whether you're black or white, you know you do this, I do it. Like, if I'm talking to somebody, if I'm telling you a story, I've gotten better about it, but for the life of me, I'll say, "I was talking to this black guy the other day, and he said," it has nothing to do with the story. I make myself intentionally, and black people, you do it too. You'll say, "This white lady talked to me." I mean, you're trying to make the person you're talking to see in your head what you're seeing, which has nothing to do. It's just a descriptor. But I find myself in the middle of it and think, why? Now, the guys I told you about yesterday, you could tell by context they were black. But you didn't know that till I said that he said I was a good-looking Caucasian. But she doesn't say, y'all, you're not going to believe this. A Jew was sitting at, of all things, at Jacob's well today. Started talking to me. Can you believe that? She could have. She could have gone home to that man she was living with and say, I need to tell you something. This man was at Jacob's well. A man? What was he doing there? Well, he was asking me for water. Really? Why did he ask you for water? Well, I don't know. Is he from around here? No, he's a Jew. What? You mean to tell me you're talking to some strange Jewish man who's asking you to cater to his thirst needs? Seriously? I mean, she doesn't mention any of that. What does she say? Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Now, if I told you next Sunday, I'm going to have this guy come in. He's prophetic. And he's known for calling people out and publicly telling them in front of everybody everything they ever did. I guarantee you most of y'all would not be back next week. You'd be like, well, this is what I was going to come this week. But we had a family thing going on. She said it'd be a virtual day. Eddie, I don't know if y'all had this in your Pentecostal church, but I remember there were evangelists who would come that would say, man back there in the third row, you're in a relationship with, people would call people out. You got a drug problem. And when I was a kid, we didn't see a lot of that kind of stuff, but if you ever saw that, I'd be like, oh, sweet Jesus, please. I mean, it's not like I was doing anything, but I knew enough about my orientation. I thought, oh, God, please don't let him know that I watched The Monkees this week and I thought Mickey Dolenz was cute. Like, please, in the name of rebuking Jesus' name, please don't expose me. What? My point is, typically, somebody telling you everything you ever did, it's not something that you're going to, it's not necessarily going to be positive. If somebody hacked into your phone or somebody found out some intimate information about you, that wouldn't be positive. Let me show you this. I'm going to show you two Brené Brown quotes. This one says, if we can share our story with someone who responds with empathy and understanding, shame can't survive. Show me the next one, also by Brené Brown. Shame cannot survive being spoken. Come meet a man who told me everything I ever did. It cannot tolerate having words wrapped around it. What it craves is secrecy, silence, and judgment. If you stay quiet, you stay in a lot of self-judgment. Now, let me show you the balance to this. James says, confess your faults to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. And if you read it in the Amplified Bible, it says your sins, your little slips, it basically implies tell it all. Now, you may have learned this the hard way. There's some people you can't tell it all to. There's some people you think, I just need to be candid with you. And let me tell you something about gossips. I have learned this. I know this by the Spirit and by experience. When someone is gossiping to you about somebody else, be careful what you confide in them. My grandmother Addie Mae always says a dog that'll bring a bone will carry a bone, which means don't think for a minute that they're not doing the same thing about you, whatever you told them. And what used to happen a lot back in the prayer days, the intercession days, is people would uncover stuff in praying for somebody. That was classic churchese for gossip. Now, I'm just telling you this so you can pray. No, you're not. You're a gossip. And you could say a lot. You know, I've been to those prayer things where, you know, somebody would say, let's all join hands. Jesus, we just want to lift Brother So-and-so up because you know he's got that drinking problem. And that's why he's cheated on his wife with so many women, two of who are standing in this circle right now. We just pray that, because you could just in prayer, you can get a lot of information out. And the scripture says, guide your affairs with discretion. You don't need to tell all your business, all that kind of stuff. So I'm not saying that you should, I don't believe you should tell everything to anybody. I mean, if you think I'm one of those guys, I'm not going to be a relationship counselor for you. Because I don't believe in that thing when somebody says, before we get together, I need to know how many people have you been with. Don't open that up. Because there's no way somebody's going to give you the answer that you want. And half the time they're lying to you anyway. So I'm saying if it's not affecting your current situation, sea of forgetfulness, baby, as far as the east is from the west. So I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is how the shame that comes from the judgment on Mount Sinai causes people to live a life of hiding. Hebrews 4 says, we have not an high priest who cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. All things are naked and open under the eyes of him with whom we have to do. So what I'm talking about here is, it's so amazing to me that this was the part of the discourse that she wanted to tell them about. Come meet a man who told me everything I ever did. And the way she's telling it, she's like, he set me free. Why did he set her free? Because he just said, yeah, you spoke the truth. And guess what? The Father's looking for people who just tell the truth. He did not. Somebody needs to pray for Jesus, because Jesus was a terrible Christian. Because you look at the people who came to him. He did not tell the woman who washed his feet with her hair, you need to find another way to make a living. He just never mentioned it. He did say to the woman caught in adultery, go and sin no more. But if you read it in the context, he's saying, if you do this again, these same guys are going to try to stone you. He said, I'm not condemning you, but they're going to. He did not tell the centurion, I can't heal that boy you're in a relationship with because y'all's relationship's inappropriate. He does not say that. Even when he went to Zacchaeus' house, who was a known criminal, he doesn't say, if you'll get your act together, I'll come to your house. Zacchaeus was the one who said, I'm going to restore fourfold everything that I've stolen from the people. And Jesus said, all right, this day salvation has come to your house. But as far as him telling people they need to get their house in order, he never said it. This whole thing about people being all up in each other's business, making moral judgments about things. I think, first of all, have you ever heard of Jesus? And secondly, who do you think you are? I remember, I get some stars in my crown for some of the stuff I have never told. But when I came out, some of the ministers in this town who have very large churches, who preached about me from their pulpits, I knew so much stuff on them from people I had counseled with that had been with them. If I'd been mean-spirited, I could have said, oh, really, we're going there? But I just didn't want that energy. It's like, where does that stop? And then especially when one of the main ones ends up committing suicide, and I'm at his funeral thinking, I'm so glad I didn't out him. And I'm looking around the congregation with people that I knew he had been with. And I'm thinking, that's not my place to tell that. I mean, it's just, there's something about exposure, and maybe it's because I've had scandal in my own family. Maybe I'm sensitive to it. But when somebody starts talking about that stuff, I mean, I've, on more than one occasion, I've had somebody come to me and say, I just need to tell you about so-and-so in the church. And I've stopped him and said, let me tell you something. If somebody was coming to tell me, now, if it was a staff member that was doing something that I thought was going to affect the security of the church, yes, I needed to hear that. But if you just want to rat somebody out to me, I'm not your guy. And you should know I'm going to do the same thing for you. If somebody comes and wants to uncover you to me, I'm going to say, you know what? That's really not your place to tell me about all the stuff that they did. If that needs to be something that y'all work out. Love rejoices not in iniquity. Listen, I've heard enough stuff in my life. If I never heard any more scandal, I'd be fine. I mean, in some of my counseling appointments, I used to stop people and say, look, I see where you're going with this. And before you go any further, let me just tell you, I've been doing this a long time, and you're going to unload, and you're going to tell me a bunch of stuff that is not going to change the way I feel about you. But you're going to walk out of here and think, oh my God, I just could not stop. Because telling the truth, it's like, I know this is crude, but telling a little bit of the truth is like urinating a little. It's like, don't even start it if you're not going to evacuate. And so once you start feeling, saying the truth, especially if it's in a safe place, you do want to tell more of it. And in some cases, you should. Now, the thing with Schwarzenegger, he didn't call a press conference together and say, I need to tell everybody, I slept with my maid and she had my baby. But when he got busted for it, he owned it. You know, in this day and time, if you're going to run for political office, you need to just go ahead and have a, before I start spending money on this campaign, here's everybody in my life I've ever had sex with. Here's everybody. I tell you one thing, and some people get mad when I say this. Whatever you say about Barack Hussein Obama, that man must not have ever flirted with a woman. Because you know, he'd have been lynched on the lawn of the White. Can you imagine if Barack Obama said publicly, I grab women by the genitalia? He wouldn't be alive now. He must have been, Michelle must be something awesome. He must just be a really good man. For whatever you don't like, if you don't like his politics, fine. This is America. We're forming a more perfect union. But you can't fault. Now, I will say this. There was that one day he wore a tan suit. And it nearly broke my heart. It nearly broke my heart. How, Brother Obama, could you wear that tan suit? And there was that time that Michelle wore a sleeveless, I shouldn't say it. She wore a sleeveless dress. I'm sorry. If you didn't know it, I hate to uncover her, but yes, she showed her arms. The last first lady, and I'm not just being mean to, this had nothing to do with your political party. There's softcore lesbian porn of her online, and people I grew up with say, well, that's, you know, it's under the blood. I'm like, well, Michelle's sleeveless dress wasn't under the blood. Don't say it again. It's too horrible. So, I mean, some of the people I grew up with, when I heard them defend certain things at the last, and maybe, can't say it. Don't even put that out there. But the way I heard them defend certain things, I thought, y'all aren't the people I grew up with. Like, I don't know who y'all are anymore. Because there was a time that would have been, you know, But here's the point. You can't tell everything, of course. However, it's fascinating to me that that's what she picked up from the conversation. I did see another thing recently. I don't think it was on Netflix. I've got all these platforms. I never know what's on what. I wish they had a TV guide for the platforms, because I'm constantly saying, was that Apple TV? Is that Hulu? I don't remember. Anyway, it was a thing called How to Have a Sex Scandal. And it was about these little kids in some small southern town who said this story about how they were victims of a ring of child molesters, and come to find out none of it was true. Like the foster mother that had them had threatened them and made them say it. And when you saw these kids being interviewed, it sounded real. And people went to prison that are still in prison. And the woman that made up the lie, she and her husband moved off. They got off scot-free. And so, but my point is, a lot of these child sex ring things that we used to hear a lot about in the 80s, I'm not saying trafficking doesn't happen, because it does, but a lot of the things that we heard from years ago, nearly all turned out to be hoaxes. Like that one that was at the big daycare, I mean, they nearly all did. But my point is what they would say, for ones that it has been authentic, they've said, when children get groomed, they're told to be silent, and been threatened with things like, if you ever tell that this happened, your mother's going to die, or whatever. So they're shamed into silence. So one polarity is just telling all your business and TMI and, you know, unnecessary. The other side that's just as wrong is being in a place of shame, where you can't tell your truth. I know what it's like, and some of you in here will know what this is like. I know what it's like my whole life to be in conversations with people thinking, I am one piece of information away from you either never speaking to me or not loving me. And, you know, my life changed when I came out, because I went from people who a week before had said, you are the most anointed man of God I've ever seen in my life, to the next week, to whom it may concern, you're no longer my bishop. Please never contact me again. And you think, wow, that was a lot in a week. That was a big, I really spiraled downward. And then there were other people who were like, well, I didn't see that coming, but you're my pastor, so where are we going next? You know what I mean? And somehow, somebody said, all the men are going to become homosexuals now. I'm like, somehow, y'all straight men were able. Just like, I knew I was influential. But I thought, if you're that worried about your sexual orientation, that didn't really have much to do with me. I mean, if my just telling some truth pushes you over the edge, y'all might have already had a little situation y'all might need to look at before. But I will say this. I remember, because people ask me this all the time, like, what was it like after that night, October 10th, 2010? I said, you know what I noticed? Because while I was talking to the congregation, you see people get up and start walking out. But at the end of it, I don't know, those of you that knew me before and after, I don't know if you could tell this. But after the service, the people who came up to me, I was already talking to them in a way that I'd never talked. I was like, everybody was, hey, sweetheart, hey, you know, I was very affectionate, and went home and slept like a baby. And it had nothing to do with sex. It had to do with telling the truth and knowing that, well, the truth didn't change, you know, how these people feel about you. And it was like, wow, I worried about that my whole life. And it wasn't as big a deal as I mean, it was, but it wasn't. I mean, here I am 13 years later, and somehow I've still been able to make a living preaching the gospel. I mean, it's 13 years later, and here I am, you know, and y'all don't even live in this neighborhood. I've moved two or three times since then. You're like, where are we going now? And because my sheep know my voice. It has nothing to do. But the truth on a personal level does make you free. And that's why I don't really live in fear anymore, because I think, well, I can say, come meet a man, and the man I'm talking about is myself. Come meet somebody who told you, I've told you all this a bazillion times, but Charles, who you can't see behind the wall there. After I came out, he came, met me after a service, and he said, I watched your coming out video, and I think you're my pastor. And I said, really? Because my gaydar is not you're reading total straight guy. He said, oh yeah, I'm straight. I said, well, why did that make a difference? He said, I told my wife, if that guy will tell the truth about that, he'll tell, I can trust him. He's my pastor. He's not hiding anything. He said, that just has nothing to do with, I don't identify with it that way, but I grew up around church, and it's so rare to hear people tell the truth. I thought, I've never heard that before. Somebody just told the truth. And I thought, well, and here we are all these years later. He's still, y'all don't see him, but he's still there. He's behind the veil. Oh, Charles, if you can hear us. Anyway, then I want to show you this. I love this part. This is the last of it. This is John chapter 4, verse 28 to 34 in the NIV. Remember, initially I said they were on the way to get something to eat for Jesus. All right. Then, leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? They came out of the town and made their way toward him. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have found food to eat that you know nothing about. Then his disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? My food, Jesus said, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. John 3:17 says, for God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. I think it's safe to assume if God did not send Jesus into the world to condemn it, he did not send you into the world to condemn it either. And what I love here is Jesus doesn't say, I set her straight. This hoe came up and she's been married to five men, shacking up with a guy. And I said, woman, sinful woman, you better get your house in order. You Jezebel. He didn't say that at all. I love this because Jesus is basically saying he enjoyed this exchange. He said this exchange to set her free and not condemn her and not her, make her feel less than, nourished my soul. Let me tell you something. When you go around judging people all the time, it's miserable. You're going to starve spiritually. There's something called the ministry of reconciliation. I tell you what, you know what happens to me now, all these years later, and it's abundant life for me. I'll have some young person, sometimes a teenager, write to me and say, Bishop Swilly, I saw your video, and my pastor says I'm an abomination, and my parents don't speak to me, and I don't even know what the word abomination means. Can you help me? And to be able to say, as an elder, a 65-year-old man who has four children and three grandchildren, and a monogamous in a marriage, to be able to say, you know what, you're totally fine. They just don't get it. You're not an abomination. I could give you a whole bunch of scriptures, and here's a book to read if you want it, but I can just tell you, you're fine. God loves you like you are. Whatever they said to you is not the truth. And that's why I'm glad I didn't come out at 25, because I can say that as a father. I can say that, no, bud, sweetheart, you're fine. Just, you know, live your life. Because here's the thing. You know, we're hearing a lot right now about especially trans issues with all the bills that have been passed. And some of it is new area that is problematic. I don't have all the answers for how all of that should flesh out. I mean, trying to... democracy is messy, and to try to find a way where everybody gets a fair share, it's an effort to continue to try to form a more perfect union. And sometimes when they show... Just last week, they had a gay pride in Jerusalem. And one of the biggest ones in the world is in Jerusalem, and they thought they weren't going to have it this year because conservatives are trying to make it illegal. And I thought, that's pretty brave of them to do that. I tell you what was really brave is when they had one in Uganda. And I saw the video of that, and I thought, y'all might be killed for this. You sure? I mean, but here's the thing. Anytime the news does a story on pride, they go straight to the most outrageous drag queen they can find that's gonna trigger all the people who are afraid that the world's turning gay. There's a congresswoman who just last week said that she's from West Georgia, and she said that eventually, if things keep going like it is, heterosexuality will become extinct. I'm like, are you kidding me? You really think, are you kidding? Baby, let me tell you something. Heterosexuality is alive and well. It ain't going nowhere. That little 10% of the population that's LGBT plus, it doesn't have any bearing on that at all. And furthermore, LGBT people aren't against that. Somebody says, well, are you saying it's better? You know, wouldn't it be better for a man and a woman to be married? Well, if they're both straight, yeah. Yeah, that would be better. and there's a part of me, I'm going to be honest with you, when they show the outrageous one, I'm like, there's a part of me that's like, oh, don't show that one. Because it's, you know, it's like, you all know how it is when somebody from your tribe is on, you know, you're like, oh, Lord, please, you know, I don't want to be identified. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Okay. Say no more. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Because I'm like, when I go to Pride, I see like families with strollers and, you know, it's like, honestly wouldn't hardly know it's not just another day in Piedmont Park. But you gotta show, you know, that one. But then I think, you know what? That's somebody that's been told their whole life to shut up and be quiet and don't be yourself. And at a certain point, they're just like, I'm not hurting you, but this is what I'm doing. And this is who I am. And so there's a part of me that says, all right, more power to you. I get it. I understand why. At a certain point, when people keep saying, shut up, be quiet, go to the back of the bus, you don't have this right, you're not allowed this. At a certain point, something in you just says, oh, hell no. No. This is my country too. This is my God too. This is my Bible too. This is my freedom too. This is my democracy. You don't own it. This is our country. It's not your church. And you're welcome to go to your church and believe whatever you want to believe. You don't get to tell me what to believe or how to behave. And so on that, I'm like, well, all right, sister. Go be outrageous. Because I get why, when you've been told, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, there's a part of you that finally wants to say, no, I'd rather speak now. And if you're not going to judge me the way I would like to be judged, then I'm just going to be who I am, whether you like it or not. And if I'm provocative, too bad, so sad. I mean, that's one of the amazing things about our democracy. But what I love here is he says, my food is what? To do the will of him who sent me. What was the will of him who sent him? The Father is looking for people like you who will worship him in spirit and truth. The will of him who sent him was not, lady, you better You better marry this man you're living with right now and repent to God. Divorce is an abomination. He doesn't say that. He says, the will of God is to set people free. That's why, and I'll bring it up again before we close this month out. That's why when I saw what Doug Wentz posted, what if the road to Damascus is the road to de-mask us? And I thought, okay, that'll preach. Now, in Exodus, it says when they heard God's terrible voice, what did they do? They all ran from him. Jesus, look, when you keep getting invited to parties, you must be fun at a party. I know it's hard for you to imagine that people were drinking around Jesus, but apparently they were. Dancing girl, well, I mean, there might have been all kinds of things going on at that party. Bishop, Jesus wouldn't have gone. Yeah, he did. He went to so many of them that he was accused of being an alcoholic. If he was this priggish school marm that was doing this to everybody, sinners would not have flocked to him the way that they did. And he did say the sick ones need a doctor, but he doesn't condemn the sick ones. He says, whatever is in you that needs to be healed, I'm here to heal you, but I'm going to heal the real you. That's why when somebody says to me, well, what's your relationship with God like now? I'm like, well, it's better than ever. Because I realize all this song and dance I did for so many years was completely unnecessary. And that God was looking at me saying, well, if that's what you think you need to do, you can keep trying to repent of that. But this is who you are. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. And one of these days you'll get it. And man, I'm telling you, that when I finally got to the place I could say, well, I am who God made me. Can the thing formed say to him who made it, why did you make me thus? He's the potter, I'm the clay. If this is the way the clay turned out, I have to be good with it. And I hear God say in my spirit, you finally get it. You wasted a whole lot of time, but now you know. All right. Let's put a comma there. Let's all stand. Did you get anything out of this today? Told y'all it was going to be good. Talked about sex. What did Bishop talk about today? I don't know. A lot about sex. I promise you. There is no, first of all, you can't convert anybody. Secondly, there's no gay agenda. You know, like we need recruits. Like, no, that's just not a thing. I'm telling you. Let's just lift our hands up and be thankful for freedom. Come meet a God. Come meet a Jesus. Come meet a Spirit who told us everything we ever did. And we have not been disconnected. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. You have not come to Mount Sinai. You have come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, to a joyful feast. One more time. God is so good. God is so good. God is so good. He's so good to me. Just remain standing and I'll play that outro, Michelle, please.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. You will then receive a notification that you successfully completed your donation. You may also visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab to give there as well. When you contribute to Metron, you're also donating to the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment into Metron.
you have a check, make it to JESM, and somebody will get it. I guess give it to me. If you have cash, just give it to BJ. If you have cash, just pay it forward. And remember, Joan will be with us next week. And next Sunday is Father's Day, so hoping to see all of you. You're blessed just as you are. You're perfectly created just as you are. You're awesome in the sight of God, the apple of His eye, just as you are. My prayer for you is that you know Him who tells you everything you ever did. And it is not an accusation. It's in freedom. That you are delivered from all shame and that you are strong in God. You wake up tomorrow saying, "This is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it." God bless you. Go in peace.